Thanks, everyone. This is our Module 2 call, our second Q&A call for Product Launch Formula 2.1 Plus. I'm glad you guys could make it here. We've got lots of questions to go through. I'll try to move as quick but be as thorough as I can. So I just flipped on over in the PowerPoint, and here we've got some questions. I had a bunch of questions about the launch story and telling your story. And I'm glad we got these questions. It shows you guys are on this stuff. You're working through it. Let me just read off three of the questions we got. One was from Alan. It says, when you covered the creation of a launch story, it seems like you only gave two possibilities, reluctant hero and loss and redemption. Somehow I expected a lot more variations than this. Then I got another question from Barry. I'm just going to go through all these. I'm going to talk about story for a little bit. From Barry, he says, you show how that story fits into a sales letter, but now not how to incorporate it into a product launch. Where do we put it? When do we reveal it? And then from Michael, his confusion is with the story. I'm not clear where in the pre-launch the story is inserted. We've learned how to make the story up, but it's not clear when it's applied. So let me just talk about the story. First of all, as far as Alan, the reluctant hero and the loss and redemption, you know, I would love to list out like 10 or 12 stories, and it'd be all real impressive and everything. You know, and when you're creating an info product, it's great to give lots and lots of options. But the reality is, I mean, there's certain archetypes of story, and you can go and study this, and I have. But in terms of the launch and really in terms of most marketing, those two, the reluctant hero and the loss and redemption, I keep on coming back to those. Every single launch I come up on, we end up using elements of those two storylines or one of the two storylines. And it's just, it's hard to go wrong with those in a launch. So I'm sorry if you expected more, but if you take those two and use them in your launch, you're going to hit a home run. And then in terms of where the story fits in, so one of the things that's important, you know, I stress this over and over, is, you know, relationship and getting people really involved, knowing, you know, so they feel that they know you, so they feel like they have a connection with you. And this, when I say you, I mean you, the person, not your business, because people don't connect with corporations. They don't connect with companies. They connect with people, especially like, you know, probably if you're Steve Jobs and Apple, then it's a little bit more about the company and a little less about Steve Jobs. But even in that case, look at Steve, it's still about Steve Jobs. So, but like, you know, most of us aren't running Apple. We're running smaller businesses, and you want them to connect with you as a person. So part of that, this story is, it's developing the story that you can tell, and you're going to want to keep on telling that story over and over and over. And it pervades every bit of your marketing. So you don't have to tell the complete story every single time, like on every single blog post and every single email. But that backstory is something you're always creating touchstones and referring back to that, to that story. Another thing to remember is that you will get sick of your marketing long before your prospects and your clients will. So you might tell that story once, and then you tell it three or four more times in the next few months, and then you stop telling the story because you're sick of telling it. But the reality is you always have new people coming into your business, or people need to be reminded of that story. So what I'm getting at is you tell that story in every interaction there's pieces of that story. So like if, you know, I talked about like the growing tomatoes and how that could be a story of how you grow big tomatoes, how you've been gardening and you've grown big tomatoes, and your neighbors always want to know why you're growing such great tomatoes, and they can never figure out how you do it so well, and you sort of just wanted to, you know, be off tending your own garden, but now, you know, so many of your neighbors and even a lot of people online have been bothering you for so long, and you realize you do have a few things, just a few simple tricks that if you shared them with other people, then they could have the same success, and then all kinds of people could be growing great tomatoes all over the world. And so, say that's just like the basic, you know, reluctant hero story. You know, you could tell that little bit of it in, that certainly could be in your pre-launch, where you're first doing your survey to find out about your product. But then you can keep on going back and touching on pieces of that. You don't repeat it the exact same way every time. But then as you move through your pre-launch, it's sort of like in your pre-launch, you give a synopsis of the story. And then you give the Reader's Digest condensed version of the story. But then as you move through the launch, then you start to flesh that story out and tell it throughout the launch. So as you're moving through your launch, let's say it's a 2-week launch. At the first you could sort of give the bare bones story right, like I just said it, really short and sweet. And that's in your pre-launch. That could be leading into your survey. You could send that via an email. The email would encourage people to just hit your reply button now and let me know what you're thinking. Okay. Then you come back and as you go through your pre-launch now, say it's a 2 or 3 week process, now you're starting to flesh that story out. Now you can talk about when one of your neighbors came over and his big frustration was, he thought he was going to have a good tomato crop, but then it got frozen. A late frost caught it. And then you could talk about how another friend came over and he had this great crop going and then the rabbits got a hold of it or whatever. And frankly, for all you tomato growers out there, I don't know if rabbits eat tomatoes or not, but I'm just giving this as an example. But basically now you're touching on different aspects of the story and you're fleshing it out. You're taking it from it's the same way. How did they take a 30-minute TV show and turn it into a 2-hour movie? You just flesh out the plot. And so that's what you do as you move through it. But so the underlying, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on the story here, but the underlying piece is that you need to be telling some portion of that story throughout your business, throughout every interaction you have. Because you're developing a personality, you're developing a persona, you're developing a character, and you're telling that character through time. So I'm not talking about, just the launch. I mean, if you guys have noticed, this is Product Launch Formula. I'm showing you how to do a launch, but I'm showing you an entire new way of marketing that most people just don't get. And one of the keys to that is creating the story and creating the character and then constantly referring back to that story, referring back to anecdotes that flesh out that story. And so, the answer is you do it throughout all your marketing, throughout all your contacts. It's not like every email you send is going to have the entire story. But, maybe 6 months from now, long after you've done your launch, and you've already sent 30 emails to them, your 31st email, it doesn't have to go through the whole story again, but it could reflect back. I mean, it could refer back to certain portions of your story. And so the idea is you take that story that you've built in Module 2, and that becomes the underlying theme, not just for this launch, but your entire business. Use it sparingly in your very first pre-launch, and then flesh that out and build on that story as you go throughout your launch. So I hope I cleared that up. I sort of went on and on about it. But it's important stuff, and I really appreciate these questions. Okay, next question. This is from Sandra. What if you have 3 distinctly different business ideas with 3 different business names? Would I set up 3 different social media profiles, one under each name, or just under the one business that would most likely utilize social media? You set them up 3 different ones. One of them is just some market that is completely, not online, 100% not online, which it's hard to imagine, but I'm sure there are. But in general, you want to set up 3 different presence online. Using the MySpace, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. Use all of those social medias for each one of them. And hold on, we just had a little technical. Okay, here we go. So sorry for that little interruption there. But, yeah, you want to set one up for each one of them. Now, I had another question come in, and it was about, boy, isn't the social media stuff going to take a lot of time? Well, you know what? Marketing takes a lot of time. Marketing, running a business takes a lot of time. This is one thing that's very, very important to your business. that discussion in the social media sphere is going to take place, and you want to be part of it. And it's a great way to drive traffic. It's a great way to create your tribe, so to speak. It's a great way to get your story out there and create that character and that personality. And when I say create a character, you don't want to just completely make something up. I mean, the way character is created in any story is you take you basically take someone's characteristics, and usually you accent them a little bit more. You create this persona. I mean, it's like if someone is heroic, you know, there's this heroic character. You know, generally what you're doing is you're taking those heroic qualities and you're enhancing them. You're making them bigger, you're larger than life, or larger, or maybe not larger than life, but larger, you know, slightly larger than they are. So, I mean, that's the way character is created in any story, be it a movie, be it a book, be it a magazine article. I mean, you're enhancing stuff. And so generally when you're creating a character, and this applies to social media, and it applies to your launch, when you're creating a character, you're basically, I think it's usually best if it's based in yourself and your life, because it's a lot easier to, you know, to do it that way. And you're just enhancing, you know, maybe, you know, like, for instance, you know, Frank Kern, everyone knows he's like this surfer dude. But I'll tell you what, people think he probably surfs more than he does. And, you know, me, you know, I talk about mountain biking. Well, am I mountain biking every single day? No, I mean, it's a passion of mine, but I'm not out there all the time. But that's part of my persona, part of my character. And so I've sort of gotten off track here. Social media, you definitely want to, it's easy to create different IDs, and so you want to do that if you've got three different businesses. And, yeah, it does take a little bit of time, but you don't have to get sucked into it. Just because you're using Twitter and Facebook doesn't mean you have to spend 24 hours a day there. I think you can maintain a presence in social media for probably minutes a day, you know, 20, 30 minutes a day, you can probably maintain a pretty good presence there. So it does take some time, but it's really well worth it. Okay, let's move along here to the next question. This is from Chris. I have a warm and responsive list of 1,300 people. I'm creating an ebook that will sell for around $67. I'm also creating a membership site. Do I launch the ebook as soon as possible and then launch the membership site a few months down the line? Or would it be better to give buyers a free 30-day period of the membership when they buy the book and then have the rebilling kick in? Okay, Chris, this is a really good question. There's a lot of different ways, and a lot of it's driven by what you want and what you need. Like, for instance, if you just did the launch for the book right now, you know, that means you could do the launch, and since you've got a responsive warm list, you could probably do a two-week launch, and 2 weeks from now you could be sitting on a big pile of cash. So the benefit of doing the ebook right now is like sort of instant cash. Now, if you're willing to forego the instant cash, then giving the book away for free while you create the membership site is a great way to get people into your membership site, and then you're creating a serious asset of, you know, ongoing income from your membership site. So that's a really cool way to do it too. The negative is you're going to have to wait because your membership site's going to be a few months down the line. Now, a middle one, which might actually be the best and maximize your dollars, is do the launch for the ebook now. Sell that thing for $67, and then do the launch for the membership site, and at that point give the book away for free, because then you're giving away a $67 ebook that you've been selling, you know, all day long for the last several months. If you think about that, like right now, if you don't publish the book first, if you don't sell it, and then you just come down into that launch, and you say you get the $67 ebook for free. If you sign, you know, as a free, you get this book free if you just sign up for a free trial to the membership site. There's no value, you haven't established a value for the ebook. And people could look at it and say, yeah, well, you know, he says it's worth $67, but it's just an ebook, you know, so what? It's not that big a deal. The bonus they're getting just isn't that big a deal. So launch that thing now. Get a big pile of cash. You can probably have it within 2 weeks from now since you've got a warm list. And then as you come down, you know, then when you do your membership site, then do it as a dollar offer. You get the book for a dollar. We've been selling this thing all day long for $67. So for a dollar, you get this plus a 30-day period of the membership site, you know, and then go back to the people that have already bought the book and just give them the dollar, you know, give them the dollar trial for the membership site. Now, one thing you're going to want to do is you definitely want to have it be a dollar trial. It's not like they come to the site, they get the free ebook, and they get the free 30-day period of the membership site. You need to get the dollar trial because that's how you get their credit card number so that you can start rebilling them. The one thing you definitely don't want to do is just do a free 30 days free ebook, and then after 30 days come back and ask them for their credit card number. That will not work. So launch the book now, come back, do a dollar offer of the book plus a 30-day trial of the membership site, and make sure you take care of those people that buy the book for $67 now. Make sure you take care of them. In fact, you might even want to give them like a, give those people like a dollar trial and make it a 60-day period so they get an extra bonus because they've jumped on board with you early. I always like to take care of the people that have jumped on board with me and give them an extra special deal. Okay, next question from Chip. I'm afraid that with my first launch, I'm going to be one of those people who screws up about 50% of it and hopes for the best. Now, this is I put this question in here because I feel real strongly about this. First, Chip, you got to watch out. That's negative thinking. And that's just, you're not going to get anywhere with negative thinking. I mean, I'm not one of these Pollyanna, you know, we go through life thinking everything's rosy all the time. I'm a big fan of accurate thinking. That's what Dan Kennedy calls it, accurate thinking, where you go through and, you know, you're sort of a short-term pessimist and a long-term optimist. In other words, you don't go through your business planning that everything's going to work perfect because it doesn't. But you know that long-term, you've got the skills and the chops, and more importantly, you have the stick-to-itiveness to know that you're going to succeed. And you know, this isn't a tough business. This is not a hard business. As long as you stick to it and keep on trying stuff and keep on learning and get the basics right, you can't lose. It's a very easy business. I mean, I used to teach people how to trade the stock market. That is a really, really hard business. You could do all kinds of things right. You can do it 95% right, 99% right, and screw one little thing up, and you're going to lose. You're going to lose a fortune. You're going to lose your entire fortune and more. This business is completely different. This business, all you have to do is get the basics right to keep on, you know, keep doing stuff, keep taking action, and, you know, keep making corrections and get the right training, and you're going to succeed. So now, Chip, lose the negative thinking. It's not going to get you anywhere. Now, with regards to this, even, like, if you did screw every 50% up, if you did a launch and you screwed 70% of it up, you're still going to win because these techniques are so powerful that you can mess almost everything up. What it is we've got all these overlapping factors that we're building. We're building redundancy is built into the launch model, marketing redundancy, so you can mess stuff up and it will still work. And even if you mess up 100% of it, you will still learn so much going through the process, but because of the interaction that you create, that the next time around, you're going to make the right corrections and you're going to hit a home run. So, you know, don't mean to pick on you here, Chip, but, you know, it's okay to screw up 50%. It's okay to screw up 70% of it. It's a very forgiving business. And please, you know, forget about the negative. The negative self-talk will get you nowhere. You have to think, and you have to have that positive self-talk if you're going to achieve anything. I mean, I know a lot of spectacularly successful people, and no one goes around with using a lot of negative self-talk. So, okay, lecture over. Next question. This is from Michael. My list is around 700 names, and they're all on my email server, which is .mac or MacMail. So in other words, these are just in his personal email. You know, these are personal email addresses that people have sent him email or he sent them email. He's using .mac, which is sort of like using Google Mail or Yahoo Mail. These are people who are either patients or former patients or people who have come to my free public programs. If I start with profollow.com, what will I do with this list? I hate to have to start from scratch as I have an excellent relationship with this list. Okay, there's a lot of people in this type of a situation where they have a list somewhere and they want to, you know, it's somewhere where they can't effectively mail those people. You know, if he's got 700 names and these are people that have corresponded with me, that's a contact list. That's not an email list. So how do you turn it into an email list? You go to profollow.com. I mean, that's not the only one. You know, that's my version of AWeber. I've talked about this in the past. You know, I'm a big fan of AWeber. I've been using them since 2003. A couple of years ago, I liked them so much that I went to them and I spent thousands of dollars and I got this, what they call a private label setup. So profollow.com is essentially the same as AWeber. The only difference is I get a little commission if you buy through Profollow. And then I'm going to be creating a series of training videos for you if you go with Profollow. But you can go with AWeber. There's others. You could go with Constant Contact and Email Labs, and you know, there's a few others. AWeber and Profollow are my favorite. I'm not going to beat it to death. They're just my favorite. So what you would do, but this answer holds for anyone if you go to, you know, Email Labs or Constant Contact or Infusionsoft or AWeber or Profollow. It doesn't matter. What you have to do is you have to get those people to join your list. Now, if you import them, you know, you could sit down and create a database or a spreadsheet of all those names and import those into Profollow. What will happen then is then Profollow will send out an email to them asking them to confirm that they want to get that email. So in that confirmation process, you know, you're probably going to get about 40% of them to say yes. So you're going to lose 60% of them. That sounds like bad news, right? It is. So this is what you do. Is instead of importing them, then I would go through and I would send all of them, you know, I'd send them all an email asking them to go. First of all, I put together some type of bonus, some type of special report, some type of, you know, it could be a PDF special report. It could be a three-part mini course series. It could be a video. It could be an audio. Put together something. It doesn't have to be real fancy. It could be a 15-minute video or a 10-minute video or audio. It could be an interview you do with someone. Just some type of something that will be, you know, that will sound sexy to them, that will sound interesting, and say, okay, this is the deal. You know, I've been sending you email, you know, just from my email address, but what I want to do is I want to be able to send you a whole bunch of really cool stuff. And, you know, over the next year, I've got, like, you know, quite a bit of stuff planned that I want to send you, just really cool free content and stuff. And I might be offering, you know, creating some products even. But really what I want to do is I just want to get you to join my list so I can send you this free stuff. All you have to do is go to this web page and put in your name and email address. And then what you do is you create a squeeze page, and you send them to that squeeze page. That squeeze page will basically offers them, you know, if they sign up, then they get this free whatever, you know, this free cool report on growing big tomatoes. So in other words, what you're doing is instead of just trying to import them and having, you know, Profollow or AWeber or whatever service, send them out a note that says, if you want to join this list, go, you know, click on this link. What you do is you send them email directly that says, hey, I want you to join this list because I'm going to send you all this cool stuff. In fact, I've got a really cool report for you right now. All you have to do is go to this web page and put in your email address, and I'll send it to you. And then, okay, but don't make it a one-shot deal. So Michael's got these 700 names. So he sends out that email, and he makes it really compelling, and he gets 350 of these people to sign up for the list. Now what you do, and this is a little bit of work, it's a little bit of manual work, but it's worth it. then what you do is you take those 350 that joined, and or the 350 that didn't join, and send them another email like 4 or 5 days later. It says, hey, I noticed you didn't sign up. I got this report is really, really cool. This is what it's going to do for you. Just go here and sign up. And I'd send a series of, over a couple weeks, 3 or 4 emails. And if you do that, you can get the vast majority of those 700 people to sign up. So in a matter, there's a lot of people like this that have a list somewhere. Like maybe you have a list at one email list host that, you're not happy with. The delivery isn't that good. The service isn't that good, whatever. You can start to send out emails to them using that list host, encouraging them to go sign up for the new list. Then as they join the new list, take them off the old list. It's that simple. But what you do is you just give them some type of carrot to get them to move. Okay. Next question is from Alan. Do you offer any instruction on how to do screen capture videos? No, I don't. This course, as you can tell, there's a lot in it. I can't teach every aspect of marketing there is. And so I do not have any tutorials on how to do screen capture videos. I'll tell you the services I use or the software that I use. Here, I'm going to try something fancy here with my pen. If you're using Windows, and we'll see how well I can write here. I'm doing this with my mouse. The program is Camtasia. CamtaS. Boy, this is a challenge. IA. So if you're using Windows, Camtasia is the program. It's not cheap. It's like $300. There are other programs that are cheaper that might be even there might even be some freebies out there, and you're welcome to go look for them. Everyone I know who does any amount of screen capture video uses on Windows uses Camtasia. They spend the $300 and they get it. It's a really rock solid program. If you're on the Mac, there's two programs. One is called iShowU, and that's the letter I and then the word show, and then the letter U. And so that's actually the one that I create most of my screen capture videos, the ones you're watching in PLF2. It's iShowU, and if you just go and Google that, you're going to find it. I forget what software is. Then the other one, this is going to be a lot more difficult to write. It's just called ScreenFlow. And this is for Mac. I show you in ScreenFlow, which is just as it sounds, ScreenFlow, ScreenFlow. So those two programs are for the Mac, and they'll basically do what Camtasia does for Windows. And now the way you want to do these, it's basically, the way I'm doing a lot of mine is I'm using a PowerPoint, or I'm using on the Mac. Since I use the Mac, I use whatever it is called. What is it called? It's funny. I'm drawing a blank here. Keynote. So I'm using Keynote, or if you're on the Windows, you can use PowerPoint, and you create a PowerPoint presentation, and you just simply talk over that as you move through the slides, and Camtasia just records it. It really is that simple. Oh, ScreenFlow, look at that. I forgot my little N. This is what I get for trying to write one. So that goes right there, ScreenFlow. These are not hard programs to use. The software is easy to use. It's not that hard to set up. The real juice from this is how you put together the videos, is what goes in the videos. And we're going to be getting into that more as we go through the program of how to create pre-launch content and what kind of pre-launch content you create. But basically what you're doing is you're just telling your story and then you're answering objections. And that's what, that's the 5-second version of how you create pre-launch content. It's much more important that, getting incredible quality is not important. Telling a good story is important. Okay. Let's see, and I got to start speeding up because I'm moving up way too slow. From Peter, mind mapping. Although mind mapping is a neat way to get thoughts, notes, and tasks creatively arranged in a sheet of single sheet of paper, doesn't the lack of timelines, sequences, and priorities compromise the usefulness, especially for complex projects? Seems like you might need to use a project planning software in parallel. I'm using mind maps to show you guys my process. It works for me in the teaching. I often will use it in my launch planning. I'm not telling you you got to use it. Use whatever you want to use. If you like using project planning software, go for it. It's certainly way more powerful for project planning than mind maps are. Nowhere in product launch formula is there a requirement that you need to use mind maps. I find them good for teaching. I find them good for creating information products. People get excited about seeing them generally in an information product. But and then for simple planning, and to tell you the truth, even though a lot of you might think this whole product launch process looks complicated, it's really not all that complicated. And so for the basic basic planning in a launch where it's mostly a series of checklists, the mind maps work pretty well for me. But use whatever works for you. If a mind map's not working for you, don't use it. I mean, you can use online software like, 37 Signals stuff, their Basecamp. You can use Central Desktop. You can use, project planning software. I mean, you could use a spreadsheet. I've seen a lot of launches planned out in spreadsheets. It's not about what tool you use. It's about using the system, the model, the formula I'm giving you, and using the sequences and the triggers. Okay, from Locke. I'm still not clear about how I go about defining who the top dogs are in the industry. Are there any tools for that? What model do I use? Do I try and figure out how much traffic their site gets? How much revenue they generate? What tool should I use for that? It's not that important that you get every top dog, or that you. This isn't a perfect process. First of all, the people that are listed at the top of Google are probably doing pretty well. They're probably doing something right. You can go to Alexa.com. Let me write that one out. Alexa.com and put in their website. And if you put them all in, you can see their traffic rankings against each other. Now, Alexa rankings are not perfect, but they're a good start. And there's not too many other places that have this type of information. So you can go there to get an idea. What type of traffic? Oh, boy. Alexa.com, it's called. You can go to ClickBank, and ClickBank will rate programs on how well they're performing. How many, it's not just pure sales, but they will rank it in a given category by how well they're performing. So the higher ranked ones are selling more product. If they're selling more product, they got a better business, so they make better partners. A lot of it's just going to be gut feel. But then the other thing, too, is someone who might be a top dog for one launch might not do well for another launch. It really comes down to their list relationship and what your offer is and how your offer relates to their list. So, I gave you the basics of finding the partners. Now, don't obsess about who's the top dog and who's number two and who's number five and who's number 20. Just go after, just go through and pick out what you think are the top 20 and approach them, or the top 40 and approach them. Just start trying to make the contacts. Okay, from Carlo. We are in what I call a mini launch mode right now. We plan a launch of a video product in March 08, which I assume he meant March 09. I sent out triggers and emails to the list. Am I too far out now, 11/28/08, to start pre-launch? So he's asking, is it too early to start a pre-launch for March 09? And yeah, it is. It really is. I mean, at this point, you might drop a hint or two. Every 2 or 3 weeks, you can mention it. You can drop a hint. But the problem with doing a pre-launch that would be end up being 4 months long is that it's tough to hold someone's interest for 4 months. I mean, there's a reason most movies are an hour and 50 minutes to 2 hours. It's because if you make a three-hour movie, it's really hard to keep the people's attention. So you really have to do a great job. You know, in general, a launch is the same thing. If you want to keep someone's attention for more than 2 or 3 weeks, you need to be a complete master. I mean, last March when I first came out with Peel Off 2, I basically had about a 4.5-week pre-launch. And that was absolutely pushing the boundaries. Most people didn't ever attempt anything like that. But I'm pretty good at this stuff, so I was able to pull it off for about 4.5 weeks. But, you know, in general, you want your pre-launch to be 2 or 3 weeks. You can have a long pre-pre-launch where you're hinting every now and then. But that's just too far out to try to hold someone's attention. From Greg, can you consider a discount on another product a bonus? It'd be a pretty weak bonus. It wouldn't get too many people excited unless it was really something that, you know, just people can't get. You know, if it was, you know, whatever, a year ago when Led Zeppelin did their single concert, and, you know, to get that ticket was like, took an act of God. If you had one of those tickets and you could give it away to someone, you know, at a discounted price, maybe that'd be a bonus. But generally, that's not going to be a real powerful bonus. You know, if you buy something from me, then you can save money on something else. Just isn't the most powerful bonus. You could have a part of the bonus package, but, you know, I'd have that, like, you know, the fifth bonus when you have the four other really cool ones. I'm going to click to another one and get a drink of water here. Okay, this question's from Teresa. I'm having trouble deciding how to pinpoint the exact path for my market. I want to do something with anti-aging, but this includes many things, includes many forms, all in an effort to achieve the same outcome looking at younger. The good news is that there are lots of angles to take, but the bad news is that it's hard to know how to focus on the right angle or subtopic. I don't have much of a list yet, so I cannot yet do a survey. So in other words, Teresa's like, she's got too many ideas, too many product ideas. So first of all, Teresa says she doesn't have much of a list. That implies she has something of a list. And if you have something of a list, you can do a survey. Usually you start to get pretty good results when you ask people to just respond to you via email, write back to you, and they're actually taking the time to write back to you. Usually, you're going to get 90% of your information within the first 20 to 30 responses. So if you have a list of even 60 or 70 people, you might be able to get 20 or 30 responses and get a ton of data. It does not take many responses. Like, I mean, if you're asking people, you know, how tall they are, and you're trying to find out the median height of your list, you're going to have to get a lot of responses to get accurate there. But when you're asking this type of a qualitative question, then it will not take many responses. Okay, but say you just don't have a list at all. Then what you could do is you could go look on forums. Look on a forum in your in whatever your topic is. You know, if it's anti-aging, I'm sure there's forums on anti-aging. Go to those forums and just spend some time looking around and look at what the hot topics are. What are the topics that draw lots of responses? What are the questions that people keep on popping up and asking? And, you know, after you're on the site for a while, if you build a little bit of a presence, then you can actually ask yourself, hey, you know, I've got like these 12 different ideas for products or reports I was going to do. And I think they're all sort of cool, but I was wondering which ones, you know, you think are the most important. And then you would list them off. Put your best 12 ideas and, you know, tell me which of these you're most interested in. The other thing you can do is go and take a look at what products are currently selling really, really well. And, you know, since Teresa's into this, she's probably got a pretty good idea what's doing the best. You know, if you go and you type anti-aging into Google, you can take a look at the ads, you know, the Google AdWords off on the right side of the page, and those ads, you know, people are bidding for those spaces. And the people that are bidding the most money get to the top. So the people bidding the most money probably have the best product, you know, the best performing product. So take a look at the products that they're selling. So a lot of competitive intelligence can be done just by taking a look around. But start with the survey of your list. If that doesn't work, go to the forums. I mean, the forums are just a wealth of information if you just take time to take a look around and listen. Okay, from Allison, I will be pulling my product off the market to relaunch using your system in January. I have a good story for the relaunch. But how would you suggest I go about taking it off the market? Do I send an announcement to my list? Do I share the announcement in my weekly evening? Do I share it in my blog posts? All of the above. Yes, it's all of the above. You know, so you probably send an announcement, and the announcement and the blog post would probably be pretty much the same thing. And then if you send a weekly e-zine a few days later, I'd reference the blog post. You know, I'd reference it, say, yeah, in case you didn't see it, we decided to pull us off the market for this reason. If you want the full story, go here and give them the link to the blog post. So hit them in every way you can. Try not to be redundant. The way to not be redundant is, you know, do the announcement. Or the announcement to the list could just be a short blurb that sends them to the blog post, and then later on come back with in your weekly e-zine and just mention it again and send them back to the blog post. Okay, from Sam, you stated that when you use payment plans, a certain percentage don't pay all the payments. Do you pay the whole affiliate commission to the affiliate when the customer buys on the payment plan through an affiliate? Or do you pay the affiliate as the customer pays? Yes. You pay the affiliate as the customer pays, and pretty much all the affiliate accounting systems, the affiliate tracking systems work that way. You know, basically, as each installment is paid by the customer, then it gets credit. The commission gets credited at that point to the affiliate. Next question. My list is very new, just 3 weeks old. Is there such a thing as a list being too new to launch a product? Should I focus on building the relationship for some length of time first before going into a launch? So now there's nothing cut and dry here. I mean, this is sort of along the lines of, you know, like if you were dating someone, when is the right time to decide to get married? You know, and it's going to vary for every relationship, for every person. But in this, generally, it's not too hard. I mean, in 3 weeks, you can build a pretty decent relationship. I mean, if someone joins your list, you send them an email. You send them a day after they join. You send them an email 2 days later. You send them an email 3 days later. And then you send them an email, like, every 5 days. And it's all really cool stuff that's romancing them. And you do that for 3 weeks, you can definitely, at that point, start to sell them something, start the launch process. The other thing is lists. The fresher they are, the newer they are, the more responsive they are. So you definitely don't want to drag your feet and go on and on for, you know, months before you do your launch. I mean, if the situation is such that your product's not ready and you can't launch for 3 months or whatever, that's fine. I mean, you could do a launch 3 years from now. It doesn't matter. But in general, you don't want to wait that long. 3 weeks, if you do it right, that's plenty of time to build a relationship. Let's see, from Peter, to list building, to find strategic alliance partners, you gave the example of putting tomato growing into Google and simply hitting search. I tried it with our own business activity, and that surprisingly came up with a list of competitors. Where did I go wrong? Where you went wrong is viewing them as competitors instead of as partners. Now, I know this doesn't work for every business out there, but for a lot of businesses it does. You can really, in so many businesses, if you work together with the people that you perceive as your competitor, you'll end up growing both your businesses. Now, I mean, like, say you had a gym. Say you had, like, you were running a gym where people pay you $30 a month to come into your gym and work out. You're probably not going to want to promote another gym in your area, right? But you could be promoting someone who personal trainers or people selling supplements or people selling workout clothing or coffee shops. And so, if it's a geographical thing where they're only going to have one supplier, you can still go geographical in your area but go different verticals. And so, I mean, too many times I see people get too caught up in competition. If you just, and even if it's a gym, like if you have a list of people that, say you have a list of people that are with your gym, but then a list of people that let their membership expire, you can certainly go to that list and promote those other gyms. And the other gyms have their list of people that have expired, and you could promote to them. So, I mean, that's one where just, you know, it's the most straight-up fierce competition, and yet I'm sure, you know, I just gave you an example of how you can find a way to work with them. And in most businesses, you can, you know, your competitors can be your best partners. I know a lot of people have a tough time with that, but I challenge you to try thinking that way and see if you can come up with a way that would work in your business. Okay, this is from, I'm not sure how to pronounce this name, from Veit. Jeff, question regarding the I'm just like you approach. The product for the project I'm about to launch uses 5 world-class athletes as the public face. At least initially, no one is going to know me, and hence they won't really care whether I'm a reluctant hero or not. What they might care about is that the pro athletes have very busy schedules and hence really had to be pushed hard to give up their valuable time to even consider talking to Joe Public. So would you transfer the reluctant hero position to the heroes of this project? Okay, Veit, whatever. I'm sorry if I'm messing up your name. First of all, congrats on getting the 5 people signed up to be part of this promotion for you. That's awesome. Several different ways you can go here. They could be the reluctant hero, since they don't want to give up their valuable time. It'd be really easy to use them as the reluctant hero. It's also, you know, you could be the, the I'm a lot like you piece could be about you. If you're just like the everyday person, the everyday Joe Public, you know, weekend warrior who wants to be like those athletes, you're just like them. You know, you're in awe that you were able to get a hold of these people, and you're in awe that you were able to get, you know, get them to agree to this thing. They might be the reluctant heroes, but they're just like, you're just like your prospects, if that makes, I hope I'm being clear on that. You know, you can build this into a story. So it'd be like I'm just going to use Tiger Woods, and, you know, let's just, instead of 5 athletes, pretend it's one. And it could just be something as simple as, why would Tiger Woods take the time out of his busy schedule to talk to you? I know you're probably wondering, it could be something like, I'm a lot like you, or no, let's forget that. You might be wondering why Tiger Woods would want to take the time or be willing to take the time out of his schedule. The guy's obviously traveling nonstop, practicing nonstop. He's getting pulled in every possible direction. Why would he take the time out to help out an average duffer like you and me? Well, let me tell you. In fact, I think, we're probably a lot alike. I've got a huge passion for golf. I go out and try to, I try to improve my score constantly. I'm spending money on new clubs. I'm spending money on lessons. I'm spending money on books and tapes, just trying to improve my game. And I'm always looking for that extra edge. But one of the things is another thing is I'm always looking at the greats in the game, like Tiger Woods. I'm wondering, what is it do they bring to their game? How do they practice? What's their mental edge? Where do they come? Where do they get that edge? And how can I apply that to my game? Well, amazingly enough, through this crazy set of circumstances, I was able to actually get a hold of Tiger. And let me tell you, that was not easy. He has so many handlers and so many people, so many gatekeepers. Somehow, through this lucky set of coincidences, and at this point, you probably would explain how you got through the gatekeepers. And you would go on to explain how you were able to pull him in. Now, this would be even better since you got 5 athletes. Your story could be the same thing. It's like you bring him in, the headline has got the names. The headline has the names that draw people in. And when I say headline, that's like the first thing you talk about with this. Like, when I started speaking there, the first thing I did was talk about Tiger Woods and why would he be interested in talking to you. Here you could say, athlete A, athlete B, athlete C, why would these guys get on the phone with you to talk to you about helping your game do this? And then from there, so you capture their attention with those names, and from there, then you start to talk about how you're just like them. You're the average person, and frankly, you're thrilled to death that you're going to get a chance to interact with these people and bring them into their world. So, and then you could go back to them being reluctant. You know, that naturally leads into them being reluctant and all the lengths that you had to go through to get them to agree to get on this call or get on this webinar or appear on stage or whatever. So that's the way I would do something like that. Okay, next question. And this one, we keep having this pop up. I answered this already in the first teleseminar. I answered in the extra Q&A videos I did from Patrick. But it's important, so I'm going to answer it one more time. From Patrick in Beulah. What is your thought about using ARP3 or ARP4? So it's Auto Response Plus, I think it's called. Auto Response Plus 3 from Fat Jack Hosting for your autoresponder. Okay, one more time. What you're doing here is you're taking a software program and you're installing it on your server. You can't do that. You just cannot do that. Because if you do that, then as soon as you start to get some, you know, a decent quantity of email addresses in and you're sending email addresses out of your server, then you're going to eventually get blacklisted. And that's because you don't have someone full-time managing your relationships with Google Mail and Yahoo Mail and MSN Mail and Hotmail and all the other ones. If you go with a service like, and I'll say it again, Profollow.com or AWeber, or some of their competitors like Constant Contact or Email Labs, those companies employ people full-time that do nothing but stay in contact with Google Mail and Yahoo Mail, all those big providers. If you're using a software program, which is, you know, on your server, which is what we're talking about here, Auto Response Plus or Mailman or ListMail or any of those programs that you can just go buy for $100 or $200 and put in your server, then your email is going to go out of your server on your IP address. And then then Yahoo Mail is going to start seeing a bunch of email coming in from you, and they're going to say, we don't know who these people are, and we're getting a bunch of email from them, and we're just going to block them. This will happen. It might not happen immediately, but as soon as your list attains any size at all, it will happen. And it will probably happen at the worst possible moment, like right in the middle of your launch. Deciding, you know, I already talked about earlier in the call how you have to moving lists, like if you want to move a list to a different host. It's not an easy thing to do. It's a painful process. Believe me on this. I have been through it many times. I've used many different hosts before I ended up at Profollow and at AWeber. Used lots of different hosts. I had to move my list lots of times. It is excruciatingly painful. So making the right decision on your list host is, in my opinion, the single biggest decision you have in your business. So you do not want to screw this up. And if you go and buy Auto Response Plus or you buy List Mail or you use Mailman on your server, no matter where it's hosted, if it's Fat, I've never heard of Fat Jack Hosting. It doesn't matter what the host is. You will pay the price down the road. You do not want to do that. Not when you can go to Profollow for $20 a month or something like that, or I think even less than $20 a month, and just sign up and it's done. It's real easy. And I'm not just telling you Profollow because I own the thing. You go to, you know, go to Constant Contact or go to Email Labs or Infusionsoft or even One Shopping Cart. You know, I already talked about that in the last call, which ones I like the best. I'm not going to go through it again. Go listen to the last call, the recording of the last call, to hear me go on and on about that stuff. But I can't be more clear. You can't do this. You cannot use your own program. Oh, another one would be Mail Loop. Mail Loop you actually have on your computer, sit on your desktop. It's bad news. I mean, it was a good program, you know, 10 years ago, but you can't do that anymore because of the way the filtering system works in the various email providers. Okay, next question from Eric in Kansas City. I've been planning to make use of third-party opt-in lists or co-reg lists. How do you effectively implement initial mailing to the list using an autoresponder service such as Constant Contact or AWeber? You can't. You just can't. You cannot go and buy Coregulus and bring them into AWeber. I don't think you can bring them into Constant Contact. If you can, in fact, any place that will let you just import a Coreg list, you don't want to be with them because they don't run clean enough lists. I hate to be hardcore about this, but if you're going to do a Coreg deal, well, maybe that is the time to do Auto Response Plus and, you know, send one email out of your server. Know you're going to get shut down. But that one email basically encourages them to go sign up for a list at someplace else. But, you know, I'm not a fan of Coreg. You know, they're... I do know people that make it work, but it's almost like black magic making it work. The best way to do it is if they will do the mailing for you. If whoever you buy the Coreg list from, they do the mailing for you. Let them worry about the mailing. And then have that mailing send them to some place where they can get on your list that's hosted somewhere else. Next question from Mark in Bakersfield. Jeff, what if there are negative comments that are posted on the blog? Can that negatively impact social proof? I've seen some comments on some blogs by anti-internet marketing idiots that are just brutal. Can you delete those immediately, or do you have to leave them on there? Okay. Yes, there can certainly be what I call reverse social proof, but I don't really, you know, usually, okay, so this is the deal. What you do, you want to have your comments moderated, and you want to be able to, and you want to approve the comments as they get posted. Now, this might, the people in the, you know, the hardcore blogosphere people might not agree with that, but the reality is your website is your website. You own that property. You know, you put it up, you're paying the hosting bill, you've spent the time to put it up, you can control what goes up there. So, there's a difference between negative comments and damaging comments. And I'm not going to give you an example of one, but I mean, a negative, like I will approve negative comments because I think, then generally what happens is if you've developed your raving fans, they'll come to your defense and it will be a lot more powerful to have someone attacking you and then have other people come to your defense than to have nothing negative up there at all. Now, if someone comes on there and they just call you a liar and a cheater, and that you don't issue refunds and you never ship product or whatever. If someone puts up something really damaging, often I mean, there will be people that, you know, in some launches, depending on your market, your list, you might attract some lunatics. You just don't approve those posts. You delete them. They never get approved. And you want to moderate your posts. So in other words, in WordPress, there's a setting that's just, you know, are comments moderated? And you say, yes, they're moderated. And then as the comments come in, then either you or someone in your company just approves them or doesn't approve them. And they don't get posted until they're approved. So, you can absolutely, it's not even like you're deleting them after the fact. You're deleting them before the fact. You can do that, and I would highly encourage it. Because you also have people coming on posting spam to, you know, like Viagra sites or prescription drug sites or gambling sites or whatever. You don't want that kind of garbage on your site either. So that's why you have to moderate the comments to your blog. Okay, from Jeffrey in Chicago, when you speak of autoresponders, are you really referring to broadcast to prospects on your autoresponder list? Because with timed autoresponder, everybody gets messages at different times and might not coordinate with the launch. Yes, Jeffrey, you're right. So basically, pretty much all the autoresponder services, they have what they're called, follow-up messages, and those are the ones that are programmed to go out automatically. So when someone joins your list, they'll get these different emails over time, you know, at different intervals. Generally, when you come into a launch, you want to turn off those follow-up messages and just go purely to broadcast messages. Broadcast messages, they're one-off messages. You write them, you schedule for when they're supposed to go out, and then they go out when you want them to go out. So, yeah, pretty much any autoresponder gives you the capabilities to do both of those types of messages, follow-up messages and broadcasts. And when you get into a launch, you really are using broadcasts because you want to time exactly when they go out. From Rob in Williamsburg, do you have a tax sale excuse for a membership site? My one-year membership is usually $177, and I'm considering a $99 year-end sale. I want to give my membership sales a quick boost. My niche is financial advisors, and I was thinking of trying to tie to the current bear market, or should I offer 18 months for the price of 12? Okay, so this is one of those things that a lot of people say, okay, you showed us a tax sale, but can you show me one that actually, you know, that works for my market? Well, Rob, this is the deal. My tax sale was for a membership site. It was for a membership site in the financial market. So that tax sale was exactly for what you're doing. And I did exactly what you did, was I just discounted the price for a couple days. Yeah, you could do 18 months for the price of 12. That would probably work just as well. In fact, I would alternate those. One time I would do a sale where you give them dollars off, and then 6 months later come back with another sale where you give them 18 months for the price of 12. But the bigger thing, the thing I want everyone to take away here, is often people look at things and say, well, that doesn't work for my market. This won't work for my market. My business is different. The reality is your business isn't different. This is an example. Rob was saying, well, do you have one of those tax sales that I can use for my business? But the reality is his business is the exact same business that I was in that I did that tax sale for. So please don't get caught up in this idea of this stuff, my business is different. It's not going to work for my business. Okay, I don't have a merchant account. Are they difficult to get? What do you recommend? What I recommend you do is go onto the main site of Product Launch Formula 2, the membership site, and scroll down, and there's an entire audio about merchant accounts. It's this interview I did with Judd Smith of PowerPay. Go listen to that one. It's going to tell you everything you need to know about merchant accounts. It's incredibly powerful. I've had lots and lots of great feedback on that audio. From Ted in Switzerland, can PLF be used for large ticket items sold business to business, or is it more oriented toward consumer launches? When he says large ticket items, products with a price tag exceeding $50,000. Ted, I personally haven't done those kind of launches, but I have at least one Product Launch Formula owner who did. He was selling CRM software, customer relationship management software, to Fortune 100 companies. These systems were a minimum of $100,000, and some of them were quite a bit more expensive. And he used Product Launch Formula very effectively. What he was doing is he was using the triggers, and he was using the triggers to get appointments. So in other words, he was using them to get in the door to make his presentation. And that can often be, you know, usually when you're talking about this type of purchase, you're talking about, a committee being involved, lots of people being involved, and it's a long buying cycle. You're not going to be able to say, at 12 noon on December 4th, go to this page and click the buy button. That's not the way those sales work, as Ted, I'm sure you know. But he used the formula and the triggers and the sequences just to get his foot in the door so he could get in and make a presentation. That's an example of, being creative in how you apply the stuff. But it definitely worked in that market. From Dave in Beverly, England, how would you look to create scarcity with a business-to-business product that won't be taken off the market, for example, a weekly industry newsletter? Just put together extra bonuses. If they buy, create a reason why. If you buy in the month, we really want to get a whole bunch of we're really interested in adding some more subscribers this month for such and such a reason. And so what we've decided to do is put together a special bonus of these three special reports that you'll get, or this DVD, or this audio, or this teleseminar, or this one-day live seminar, or whatever. Put together some type of cool bonus and then offer it for a limited time period. It's basically like the tax sale that I did. What was the tax sale? I needed money because I got a big tax bill. So I'm going to put the product, this product we never put on sale or almost never put this thing on sale. We're going to put it on sale for the next 36 hours because I need to raise money. So you're probably, you know, in B2B, you're not probably going to have a tax sale, but you can have the exact same type of thing. We want to, you know, we want to sell a bunch of subscriptions. We want to add a bunch of new subscribers because such and such. And so we've created this special offer, which is we're discounting it for this period of time, or we've added this bonuses for this amount of time. You know, go sign up now. Okay, and I'm running late here. I think that was our last. Oh, looks like we got one more question here. Eric in Kansas City, this is a quick one. What is a good system to host streaming video on as well as deliver content on a schedule and controlled access based on membership level? So you're talking about two different things. One is a membership site software. I talked about that on the first Q&A call. Go back and listen to that one. I talked about different software packages. In terms of hosting streaming video, if you're going to stream much video at all, you can't do it off of your server, even if you have a dedicated machine. There's lots of different services to use. The one I'm using actually for PLF2 that a lot of people are using these days is Amazon Web Services. It's called S3. That's the letter S and then the number 3. And if you just Google Amazon S3, you can get lots more information on that. But basically what you're doing is you're using Amazon servers to stream your video, even though people are looking at them on your site. And that's the way PLF2 is being run, actually. We're streaming the video off of S3.